Welcome back to another episode of Tank Talks, where I, Tank, and co-host Monica talk about and review movies. Hashtag independently organized event. This episode, we're talking about Baywatch, which is a 2-hour and 1-minute movie that came out in 2017, starring Dwayne Johnson, Zac Efron, John Bass, Alexandra Daddario, Kelly Rohrbach, and Priyanka Chopra. The story follows lifeguard Mitch Buchanan, played by The Rock, and his team, who must take down a drug lord in an effort to save their beach. So like a weirder, shittier version of Point Break with no Keanu. Can we just talk about Baywatch for a second before we get into this?
I've never seen Baywatch, the show. I'm vaguely aware of it. I'm aware of two people who are in it.
Hasselhoff and Pamela Anderson?
Yes, those are the only two.
And it's just all about slow motion, half naked running, right?
I mean, I think they're in bathing suits and they're... I mean, I think as much as I know is the parts that were referenced in this movie.
Yeah. Anyway, so this movie starts off. Mitch Buchanan, played by The Rock, immediately after arriving at the lifeguard station for duty, miraculously identifies the change in wind direction is going to jeopardize the safety of some asshole out in the water who is kiteboarding. And sure enough, he springs into action and saves him. What follows is a slew of slow-mo action shots of The Rock diving, The Rock swimming, The Rock emerging from the water and carrying an unconscious windsurfer, and The Rock spitting water. And keep in mind that this is like 15 seconds into his lifeguard shift, and some asshole's already trying to die on him. Did you have a favorite slow-mo clip of this sequence?
Well, I liked right at the end where he emerges from the water as the giant Baywatch letters come up from the ocean, and we sort of establish that the movie we are watching is the Baywatch, and The Rock is also the Baywatch. He tells the guy, when they get to shore, he says that he's always on duty. About 5 minutes before this, he was not on duty, so this change in wind direction was very fortunate for The Rock and for the kiteboarder.
Yeah, I particularly enjoyed the five-second clip of his shoe gripping the reef in preparation for his heroic dive. I don't know if you latched onto that. That was probably my favorite part.
I think that's what's good about a lot of these sequences, is everyone can have a favorite 30-second part of it and really get an eyeful of it.
So after he saves the dude, literally 3 minutes into his shift, after already saving one person, he decides it's a good idea to take a break and go for a jog. This struck me as irresponsible, given the evident propensity of assholes on the beach trying to kill themselves, but this jog sequence serves to solidify that The Rock has godlike status as he interacts with the locals, speaking some stupid dialect of surfer, interrupting basketball games, and all these people know his name. Even the 8-year-old Asian kid at the end, making a sandcastle, who spots a bag of drugs floating in the water. And that kind of sets the plot in motion.
Yeah, The Rock is very popular. He has 500 saves, we find out. He's very well respected. He's compared to about half of the Justice League throughout this movie. They ask if he's Batman. He says he's similar, but bigger and browner, is how he's described. We see a guy who he saved his sister at some point, and the guy, I guess, every day makes a giant sandcastle version of The Rock, and The Rock tells the guy to make sure the dick is bigger. He says he wants a big dick, a huge dick on this sandcastle version of him. So that's sort of the sense we get of him throughout this jogging scene as he's jogging off the beach that he's sworn to protect.
Yeah, great time for a jog. But anyway, then it
cuts. Just quickly. The only person who he does not get along with is the cop. The one cop that this town has.
Well, the people who haven't seen the movie don't know that this is the town's only fucking police officer.
Yeah, but that's why I'm letting them know. I forget his name. It begins with a B, maybe?
His name's Ellerby. Ellerby. By some no-name actor.
No, he's actually Black Manta in the Aquaman. I think he's actually becoming a more famous actor. I think at this time maybe he was not well known. But yes, he is the one cop in this town, and he is the only person in the town who doesn't like The Rock. And that is what we learned so far.
So then we cut to a scene where Ronnie, played by John Bass, who is just some white guy, and Dave, his friend, played by Hannibal Buress, are playing with a quadcopter on the beach. And we get our first slow motion action shot of CJ running. And this is like 7 minutes into the movie. So the movie clearly knows why you're watching it, right? Staying true to the whole Baywatch slow-mo jog. And we learn Ronnie wants to try out to be a lifeguard after an implied number of failed attempts. But as he fails to even communicate with CJ, we quickly gather that it's not his ability to thrive in high-pressure situations that led him to want to be a lifeguard.
Yeah, it seems like he's never seen a woman, even though he spends most of his time, it seems like, ogling women, and they're testing this thing out on the beach just so he can record these women. But he is completely unable to speak to CJ, who inexplicably still seems kind of interested in him.
Yeah, I thought that was weird.
Like, she, it's not like one of those things where over time she grows to like him. She's just down to clown instantly. Just loves this dude.
And nobody knows who John Bass is. Like, he's no Zac Efron, right? Zac Efron and The Rock are the male eye candy in this movie. This John Bass guy is like the dorky, chunky IT guy.
Yeah, well, he's the tech guy, you know, as they say several times. But yeah, he's just a guy, and he's in the movie sometimes. And other times he's not in the movie for about the middle half. it's kind of strange.
So then it cuts to the character Matt, played by Zac Efron, looking fierce as he rides in on a motorcycle. And we get a slow-mo shot of Summer, played by Alexandra Daddario, running toward him. And by my count, this is the slow-mo titty bounce number 2. They have a little flirt scene, and we learn that it's tryout day for the lifeguard team. And we find out that Mitch takes his job very seriously, as he berates Matt, a gold medalist in the 200-meter freestyle, by calling him different boy band names. So Matt is kind of set up as this D-bag, and Mitch is a macho tool who's kind of married to the job.
Yeah, we have One Direction, New Kids on the Block, NSYNC, I think are the three we get right now. He's mostly called nicknames throughout the movie. But yeah, so we met Summer. We met Matt in this scene. Yeah, Summer really doesn't like Matt the first 3 seconds they meet. She immediately tells him to fuck off because this is an R-rated movie. And that's pretty much all it uses. That's why a couple other things. But she's really not into him at all until a couple minutes later, it seems like. Because now we're on the beach and people are signing up for the tryouts. Is that where you're at?
No, there's the whole choking on the carrot scene, right? Am I getting out of order?
I think you're a little bit out of order. I think right now they're signing up for the tryouts. Brody goes to talk to Summer again. She says, sort of sarcastically, "Why don't you know? Eventually, I'm going to fall in love with you. Why don't we just skip the whole thing and you can put a baby in me?" Because she says, I don't want to try. Why don't you skip ahead and put a baby in me? Matt Brody says, trying's the best part. And then The Rock and Zac Efron argue about him being a gold medalist, whether or not The Rock has heard of Iowa, the fact that Brody has won 2 gold medals. No one cares about these gold medals. These are unimpressive to these lifeguards, just completely. And I think then we get to Ronnie on the beach is after this discussion.
Gotcha. Yeah, so it's Dave and Ronnie again. And Ronnie just so happens to start choking on a baby carrot at the same time that his love interest CJ is running by. So she runs over to give him the Heimlich, and this is slow-mo titty bounce number 3, and proceeds to give him the Heimlich, which doesn't really lend itself well to slow-mo titty bouncing, but the director delivered a nice slow-mo ass jiggle shot of her power thrusting her hips into this guy, which I'm counting as number 4.
Yeah, I actually made note of that. There is just a shot of the frame is just her ass as it thrusts into his ass. as she's Heimlicking. It's literally just full screen. This is all we're going for. Like, this movie sort of knows what it is half the time and just doesn't the other half the time. But it's really big on the eye candy. And so this is the part with the boner.
Yeah, so he coughs up the carrot, and his buddy Dave is quick to discreetly point out to Ronnie that those power thrusts have given Ronnie a boner. So Ronnie, to hide it, sort of belly flops onto this wooden beach chair in front of him and kind of awkwardly tells CJ to go away. And we find out that this belly flop has actually lodged Ronnie's boner and nuts in between two of the wooden slats of the beach chair.
At like a perpendicular angle. Yeah. It sort of turned 90 degrees, got stuck, and then his balls sort of created a seal so he couldn't pull himself upward. So he's now stuck to a bench by his dick.
Yeah. So he's ultimately able to dislodge his nuts and dick by body slamming and breaking the chair, but not before Mitch and CJ come over and like awkwardly try to fix it by seemingly embarrassing him in a crowd of 40 people or so.
Huge crowd gathers. Huge crowd. But first it's just CJ who kneels down next to him, and you just get the shot of just her breasts and him staring at them. And then everyone seems confused as to why his boner isn't going away. This seems like the worst way to settle a boner, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
get your face as close as breast as you possible is her prescription for this.
So in this scene, she actually said something like, "Oh, don't worry, we can fix it." And I fully expected her to just start jerking him off under the chair. Because at this point, the movie didn't have any shame. And we already learned that lifeguards are really dedicated to helping people. So I thought she was just going to jerk him off to get rid of the boner.
You thought she was going to jerk off this guy in the middle of the beach?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're going with a why not jerk off people in situations, then yeah, you can get there pretty easily. I just feel like if you just leave a boner to lie, it will go away soon, right? Like, what's the impetus for needing to get this out immediately? You know? Like, he's just laying on a bench, doing normal things.
Yeah, there was no rush.
Eventually, he'll go flaccid. You know, definitely quicker if CJ's out of the picture. You get a lot of shots of the underside of him trying to pull his dick up through the thing. This is a very dick-heavy movie, honestly.
Very.
Then they turn it vertically, so now the whole beach is just staring right at this dude's dick.
Yeah, he's like standing up behind the chair as his dick is on the other side of the chair.
Yeah. CJ's still here. Hasn't figured out that she needs to leave.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Then he just fixed himself by just breaking the bench.
Just body slamming it.
Could have done that an hour ago.
Before 40 people showed up. It was so simple. So then Mitch, something I forgot earlier was, Zac Efron, Matt, had some like note that he tried giving to Mitch to say, "Hey, just want to let you know I'm already a member of the team." And Mitch kind of rips it up and says, "Nah, you got to try out just like everybody else." So after this, you know, they had a little beef. Mitch goes down to talk to his captain about Matt, where he kind of begrudgingly commits to giving Matt, the insubordinate pretty boy, an opportunity to fulfill his community service requirement by being a lifeguard, which plays well with their budget constraints. We also learned that the drug Mitch found is called Flocka, which Mitch describes as bath salts on meth.
Right. Yeah, we do get that. We also get, I think, might have been my favorite line when Matt Brody is being interviewed during the promo shots. Do you remember that scene?
Oh, yeah. The captain shows to Mitch.
Yeah, and he says, "There's no I in team, but there's a me."
And she goes, "Are you dyslexic?"
He goes, "No, I'm Caucasian." This is like the type of humor this movie has, but I just loved it in this scene. It worked so well for me, just the rapid-fire delivery of this. Like, I think occasionally the humor in this movie works.
I agree. It's
so goddamn ridiculous. But then it just, like, can't figure out what it's doing the other half of the time, which is, you know, the other part of it. But yeah, that's so. Mitch is unimpressed by this letter that Brody has. He's unimpressed by his swimming ability. He's really unimpressed by pretty much everything, except lifeguarding, or bay watching, which is distinct from lifeguarding, we'll learn several times, but not how, it's different.
Yeah. So then The Rock leaves the office, whatever. The next scene is we are introduced to Victoria, played by Priyanka Chopra, and you just get the sense that she's going to be the villain. She's meeting with Councilman Oscar from The Office. Sorry, that doesn't make sense. On the show The Office, the guy who plays the gay accountant, Oscar. I don't know the guy's actual name.
His name is Oscar Nunez.
Okay. Councilman Oscar is how I refer to him. And she bribes him with a Tag Heuer watch to advance some sort of business opportunity of hers. And with this, I have a question for you. Since you have political aspirations, if you were a city councilman, what kind of bribes would you prefer?
Yeah. So, I mean, the watch ends up being helpful, you know, because it helps identify this whole plot. If I was going to be bribed, though, I mean, this lady, I think, is sort of taking over the beach. I mean, I think I'd like, you know, sort of some ownership in this club would be good. You know, I think I'd want something that helps keep me alive, though. It makes me useful. I'm not sure how I'd do that. But I feel like if I'm going to get bribed, I don't want it to be a one-time thing, because that makes you disposable, which is sort of an issue a lot of people in this movie have. One thing, though, if I'm going to get into some kind of shady business, I'm not going to do it on a boat.
Yeah, the people in this movie, they're just like, oh, yeah, here we're doing nefarious activities. Why don't we just go out to sea real quick and we can conduct the business activities there?
Yeah, it just makes it really easy for you to be murdered. So I'm not going to go out on, like, and what was the conversation they were having as they drove out on the boat, too? You know, they sort of get to the middle of the ocean and then they're like, hey, let's discuss our crime. And then they sort of, you know, decide to go back. But it's just like, they could have just done that on the pier or something.
Well, I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. The first meeting that she had with Councilman Oscar was in her restaurant or something. So that was on land, right? And then he makes the bad decision later to go out to sea. But the scene after she bribes Councilman Oscar for the first time is it starts out with slow-mo titty bounce number 5. CJ's running over to Summer and Ronnie, and Summer actually asks Ronnie, she says, why does it always look like she's running in slow-mo? Followed by CJ asking Ronnie, hey, how's your dick? Like, what the fuck is this movie?
Yeah, it's an R-rated movie. And, like, if it weren't for, like, the weird dialogue, you wouldn't be sure why. I mean, there's, like, a lot of gratuitous, you know, not, like, nudity. I mean, there's a little nudity, very little, but, like, there's a lot of, you know, bathing suits. But, yeah, it uses its R rating basically just to talk about people's dicks and occasionally boobs, but sort of always in that language where it's sort of, you know, I don't know. It feels like it could be PG-13. She also says, why does it always look like she's running in slow motion? She looks wet, but not too wet. That's the other line. So this girl basically is a real life fantasy character to these people who are both just, you know, very, very engaged at looking at her. Like us, the audience. They're really audience surrogates in a lot of ways.
So later in this scene, there's a press conference to kick off the Baywatch lifeguard team tryouts, where apparently thousands gather to observe this thing. They're like all over the pier, all over the street, all over the beach. And of course, the first part of the tryouts is a slow-mo run, you know, to see if your titties bounce enough, I guess. I don't know. But that's number 6.
Is this a press conference? Because I don't think there were any cameras. I just think 1,000 people gathered to listen to this. as this CJ describes the contest, which is called the Absentee Father. For some convoluted reason that she goes on to explain the metaphor. I don't think this is a press conference. I think this is just this is what happens when the Baywatch gets a microphone. Everyone gets around and listens. Is what I'm seeing. Because then they basically do a triathlon type thing?
Well, they go for like a jog under the pier and then swim, but they don't bike.
Okay, yeah, so they do a diathlon.
Yeah. So, I mean, had to start out with the titty bounce, which I guess we see Ronnie's titty bounce, so I'm counting that as number six.
You also see a lot of Summer here.
Oh, yeah, because she's, like, leading the pack.
She is, yeah. She is outrunning all these other people. Of just all kinds of people. It's really just everyone wants to be a fucking lifeguard. Which I guess when you see the Rock's house later, you understand why, because he seems like he has some cash. But, yeah, I don't know the appeal of this. But, yeah, it's really popular. And they sort of climb over one of those army rope things.
Yeah, and then climb up these mounds of sand that are like 8 feet tall and go over those. Which I don't know if those were supposed to be like shaped like boobies, if that was supposed to be another.
I feel like when this movie wants to have boobs in it, it just shows you boobs. It doesn't, you know, make mounds of sand and, you know, call it whatever.
But during this scene, Matt can't be bothered by this, you know, run, swim. So he's just chilling on the sidelines, sipping a Mike's Hard Lemonade. And Mitch goes over and challenges him and says, you know, if you can beat me on the course, you can be on the team and I won't fuck with you anymore. And then
it's important to note that the course he's referring to is neither this course they're doing nor the other course that we see.
Yeah.
It's really not much of a course at all.
No. So a shredded Matt proceeds to do this separate American Ninja Warrior type obstacle course. And after he finishes gloriously, Mitch says that's not the right course and leads him over to this kind of World's Strongest Man style obstacle course.
Oh yeah. That's actually exactly what I had in my notes. American Ninja Warrior and then World's Strongest Man.
Yeah,
it goes from the abs and like sort of, you see it in an arrow at some point. He does like sort of climbs up with the bar, then does hand over hand. I mean, this guy's ripped his shit. He's got like 15 abs, you know? I mean, this is why they make the movie. He does like a little like, you know, showboating for to Summer. He gives her a little wink at some point. You know, I mean, he's just milking it the whole time, which the Rock chastises him for. But yeah, then they go to the tire flip, refrigerator carry. Where the fuck did they get these refrigerators?
I don't know. Are these tools of the team?
Why is this course set up anyways? Is confusing.
Well, you see the tires later on in the movie, so I guess the refrigerators and the tires are like permanent fixtures of the team. That's like part of their training equipment, I guess.
I don't think anybody but The Rock and Zac Efron can lift these refrigerators. These girls weigh 100 pounds. Yeah. And they're about to fall over forward anyways. And Ronnie is just not an athlete.
I don't know.
He's a tech guy. So that's what they say.
Well, maybe this is just The Rock because, you know, after how many years of being a lifeguard, he could just do what he wants. He's like, you know what? I want to occasionally lift some refrigerators, so we're going to get these. But we're going to get two of them just in case somebody can ever challenge me. And
it's four refrigerators total because you got one off each shoulder. I mean, I understand why they have a pull-up bar. Although I'm not sure that The Rock can do more pull-ups than Zac Efron.
Definitely not. It was stupid that Zac Efron was struggling with those pull-ups. But The Rock could apparently do 100.
The Rock is at, like, peak juiced at this point. I mean, he's fucking enormous. You know? But, you know, Matt fails the course. I mean, if you fail this, if you're not the world's strongest man, how could you possibly be a lifeguard? Yeah. This is what we learned. I mean, like, you know, Ronnie and blonde girl.
CJ.
And CJ. They can be lifeguards, even though they can't lift any refrigerators.
Yeah, I think Ronnie can do 100 pull-ups.
You think so?
Yeah. Why not?
You think Ronnie can
do- Yeah, Zac Efron can't do one. Ronnie can do 100. That makes sense.
So this is where the action kicks.
Yeah. So they're interrupted by this woman screaming a half a mile away, because sound really travels well on this beach. I don't know if you've ever been on a beach, but it's fucking windy and you can't hear somebody that's more than like 40 yards away from you. But these people have supersonic hearing and can hear people a half mile away on a pier. So then we see that this woman, or her kids first like take turns jumping off a pier in the world's shittiest group suicide attempt. And then she goes in after them, and Mitch and the team race over on quads. But Matt hops on some motorcycle and instead
he commandeered a motorcycle
and instead goes onto the pier and starts like driving through the pier through all the people, thereby setting him set up to look super sweet. As when he gets to the end of the pier, he jumps directly off the bike and into the water. So not only would he be launched like 20 yards away from the base of the pier where these people need help, but he also risks that the ghost-ridden motorcycle just crashes through the guardrail of the pier and falls onto these people and kills them. So after Mitch and the team actually save the people and bring them back to shore, it's apparently time to announce which three competitors made the team, and shocker, it's Summer, Matt, and Ronnie for some reason.
Three characters we know the names of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think this was going to be a suspenseful part of the movie, and it wasn't. But, you know, it's like, why have all these competitions? If, you know, like, what did they see in Ronnie that made them want to put him in this? This was my question of, how the fuck did Ronnie get involved?
Well, I guess Mitch kind of explains it to him, and is like, oh, you have fight, and you don't give up, so that's why we put you on the team. It's like, I'm pretty sure other people on the team would have outperformed him and also had, you know, a related level of fight, but that doesn't go well with the story.
I get this is a scrappy underdog. I don't think we see him in the water at all in this movie. Is he ever in the I don't think there's a single scene. He's in a bathing suit sometimes running along the shore. I don't think he ever gets in the water. I think every other character gets in the water at some point.
Yeah, you might be right on that.
But not this guy.
Yeah, so given that there was no correlation between the qualifier diathlon and who was ultimately selected, what's the fucking point of even having the qualifier? I mean, Matt didn't even compete and still made it, so it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, in the competition he did have, he failed, I guess, or won one of them, but it wasn't the real qualifier. It was a secret qualifier. It seems like The Rock is just kind of creating his own little harem. He says a nice gig where every year they add. They say usually they add one person to the Baywatch every year, but this year they're adding three. Doesn't say why. But yeah, he just has, you know, he can just kind of pick whoever he wants. And it seems like he just sort of exercises that executive authority to hire whoever he feels like it or whoever the plot demands, you know, being, you know, in Matt's case.
So would you agree with me if I were to say that the only reason they had the qualifier scene was to just get Ronnie's slow-mo titty bounce?
Ronnie the guy?
Yes.
No, I think we also wanted some of Zac Efron doing his, you know, up and down stuff. I think we wanted some of The Rock lifting refrigerators. I mean, I think this was just the guys showing off, you know? I mean, if you got the abs, you got to use them. So that's what we see. But yeah, I think that, I mean, the point of the scene was just to see, you know, these guys, you know, flexing a little bit, flexing on us.
So then, you know, after the failed save by Matt and the actual save by Mitch, did you catch that Mitch actually hits Matt with another pop culture insult and calls him High School Musical?
He does. This one was weird to me. This one was weird to me because, of course, Zac Efron was famously the lead in High School Musical. And it seems weird to have. I actually think he hit another one. He calls him Hot Wheels, I think, a little bit before this. But I think, yeah, now he's High School Musical, which this one was like an actual reference, which, you know, that he was in, which sort of breaks the, you know, immersion of this whole movie. Really, it was really took me out of it for a minute. You know, they couldn't think of more boy bands and stuff.
Don't know. They had already used the three I know, I think. Did they use Backstreet Boys?
No, they had One Direction, New Kids on the Block, and NSYNC.
There's no shortage. They could have just stuck with that theme, but I guess The Rock wanted to switch it up. So they're interrupted after saving these people by Victoria, who invites them to her Huntley Club. And then she kind of goes away. The next scene is where homeless Matt sort of gets tricked by CJ after napping underneath the pier to spend the night at Mitch's house, who sets him up with a cot and orders him, "Don't jack off on my sheets. Don't."
I think he says that he'll know if Matt Brody jacks off on his sheets. We see Mitch's house. Mitch has a bunch of fish tanks. Mitch's fish tanks all have figurines of Mitch in different poses. Yeah. Mitch has like an insanely nice house on the beach, given that he's a lifeguard or the Baywatch Tower 1 captain. But yeah, and we learned that Mitch has a CB radio, which for whatever reason becomes plot relevant.
Yeah. So after a rough night, the next day is apparently training day, where there's, you know, more titty bouncing, a little CPR, and of course some light sparring. So one of the questions I had was, what purpose would combat skills serve in lifeguarding?
I actually made note of that too. Yeah, they're doing a little boxing. She has like sort of the hand pads, and I think Summer is practicing her boxing. I don't know who they think they'd want to box, although we do learn that there are issues with sand grifters. So maybe if you came into conflict with a sand grifter, it'd be good to know how to box. But yes, I'm not sure what kind of combat these lifeguards... See, I think one of the things the movie runs into a lot is that these people are lifeguards. But the movie and the people insist that they are not lifeguards. But the movie doesn't have any reason why they're not lifeguards. So as you see all these things that they do that are non-lifeguardy, the movie just keeps trying to insist that, you know, we should believe that they are at least ostensibly training to be lifeguards. Because at no point does he say that they're training for a secret drug task force, which is sort of like what the movie is having them do. But they're supposed to be lifeguards, which is why running this triathlon is supposedly relevant.
So the next scene is of Victoria, who we learn is the source of the recent influx of Flocka, the drug. And she takes...
Wait. You skipped over a scene.
Uh-oh.
You skipped over a scene of Matt Brody and Summer. Matt, because there's a written part of the Baywatch training, and Summer is training for it, and Matt asks if she would like to study with him, and then she accuses him of staring at her boobs, and he admits that he was, and then she starts bouncing in order to, I don't know, draw more attention to them. And then he is very flustered by this because he is just incredibly non-suave for whatever reason. Even though he was doing the little, you know, when he was doing the bars, he was, you know, giving people winks and stuff. But now he's just completely caught off guard by, you know, boobs and women. But I only reference, you know, I only mention that because they reference it later and we just don't want people to be caught unawares.
Gotcha. Yeah. So... the next scene after that is where Victoria takes Councilman Oscar out on a yacht and instructs her henchmen to kill him because he's no longer of use to her. He's out of time or something.
Yeah, he couldn't convince... He got the councilman to agree to her plan, but he couldn't get the business owners to agree to sell their properties.
Gotcha.
So it should be noted, this entire plot is Scooby-Doo. I don't know if you ever watched a lot of Scooby-Doo, but in Scooby-Doo, there was always someone who dressed up as a monster to scare people away so they could buy cheap real estate. And that's this lady's entire plan, is to bring in drugs to make the people lower the real estate value so she can buy up the entire bay and make the beach private. And this, she thinks she's a Bond villain, but she's actually a Scooby-Doo villain. And I think that's just really important to be aware of as we go through this movie.
So after the henchmen kind of proceed with handling Oscar, the next scene is back on the tower, and they receive a distress call on the radio of a boat being on fire a half mile away, where we get more heroic action shots of Mitch throwing passengers off the boat into the flaming water and kind of playing firefighter. But I was kind of confused because how did they hear the lady shriek on the pier earlier from a half mile away, but don't notice the smoke billowing out of a fucking boat a couple hundred yards out to sea? They can hear supersonically, but can't see fucking 50 feet.
Well, you're forgetting that when this happened, the binoculars were being used to stare at Summer's breast from about 10 feet away by Matt Brody. Because the conversation that precedes this rescue is them discussing how he's staring at her. So this is whatever, you know, bounce scene number, whatever. But that's where we were at beforehand, and that's why they didn't see it. Because he was using the binoculars for his lechery.
So
it also, just to be quick, it seems like they all get uniforms, which are just a variety of red swimsuits. But it seems like they all have the same ones. There's like a one piece with the golden zipper. There's the two piece with the blue bottoms and the red zipper top. There's a few different bathing suits, but they seem to all have them. And they seem to just be distributed as the uniform, but they don't have a specific uniform to wear every day. The Rock just wears his, like, what do you call it, surfing shirt all the time for whatever reason. But the women all have just a variety and a huge collection of bathing suits.
Yeah. So when they go to save the people on this boat, Matt kind of fucks up again and he tries to be heroic by jumping off the jet ski, but ends up trapping himself underneath the flames under the water. And he's ultimately saved by CJ, who comes over on the rescue boat with Steph. Kind of a useless character, but she's number two in charge of the whole team. And, you know, they find, obviously, Oscar unconscious upstairs, and he's the last person the Rock saves. But then they all sail away on the boat that Steph brought, and Mitch and CJ are, you know, trying to resuscitate Councilman Oscar, but failed to.
I actually don't think because he was dead before this happened.
Well, we found that out later. They thought he was just kind of like unconscious from the flames or something. So they were doing CPR. So then, you know, the Rock or Mitch, when asking the other three passengers that they actually saved and who are alive, how the councilman got that way, Mitch notices a bag of Flocka miraculously still tucked in the side of one of the girls' bikini bottoms. So Matt at this point has destroyed or abandoned both a motorcycle and a jet ski. I don't know if this is going to be a recurring count throughout the movie at this point, but he's just really good at abandoning and destroying equipment.
Right. So two things I think we should touch on. He was saved by Summer, not CJ. And he sort of deliriously says, "You do care about me," and boops her on the nose. This is Matt. Because, you know, this is their budding relationship. And the character of Stephanie, who you briefly alluded to, is the sixth member of the Baywatch, who just has no plot, it seems like. I think she was written as a love interest for The Rock, but instead The Rock has no love interest. She is second in command, because later they try to give her command. She barely has any lines, and she is billed. The five Baywatch members are billed in the movie, then the villain, and then her.
Yeah.
So she is just the, you know, the outcast, you know, the ranger or whatever. No one seems to like her. And I don't know why. She seems fine. She doesn't have like a love interest, so there's not as much pairing for them to do. But yeah, she was just kind of wildly discarded from this movie by this movie.
So they finally get back to the coast, and on land, Mitch sort of has a pissing contest with the only cop in the town. After that,
because Mitch tries to perform an autopsy on the body.
Oh, while he's on the gurney, like on the beach.
Yeah. Well, as they're loading him, this is when they have the little, you know, jurisdiction battle. Is when they're trying to load the guy into the ambulance, and Mitch is trying to do an autopsy, and the cop comes over and stops him because lifeguards don't perform autopsies. Because that's true. That's a true thing.
Yeah.
Mitch doesn't want to be a lifeguard, but he seems to take great pride in his lifeguarding. And it's sort of never resolved in this movie what Mitch really wants, other than to, you know, stop this drug infestation on his beach, which he's very possessive of.
He could have been the second cop of the city.
Yeah. The city could use another good cop.
But instead they just rely on this vigilante lifeguard team. It just, whatever. So the scene after that is Ronnie singing in the shower, and for some reason no longer has the peculiar nipple hair that we saw on him when he was doing the qualifier earlier.
Yeah, he had the nipple hair, and then he had sort of the straight down the middle hair.
Yeah, so apparently in addition to combat, self-grooming is part of the Baywatch training regimen. CJ, you know, walks in to this big-ass shower room where she kind of flirts with him. And I guess he at least manages to not get a boner this time. So is this a win? But it is the first nudity we have of the movie, and of course it is the bare ass of Ronnie as he's showering.
Right. Well, I mean, in this scene she's not thrusting into his pelvis with hers, so maybe that's why he didn't get the boner. So she's taking his lunch order. I don't know if you did you mention that?
No.
Okay, because I only mentioned this because she asks him if he wants, as she's looking at his dick, if he wants a meatball sub a foot long, and then Ronnie says he prefers a salad. I don't know how much of this is innuendo, but I imagine it's at least most of it is just meant to be, you know, I mean, I feel like you can't say foot long without it being innuendo, especially not in this movie. And they just really go for it here, which I love.
Yeah.
Because nothing's left on the table, you know, except the actual, you know, nudity of it. But they say in the showers, you're usually supposed to wear your swim clothes. And the other thing we see is there are other actual Baywatch members who also are using the shower. There seems to be another crew. So it seems like we're just seeing crew from Tower 1. But there's also just a bunch of lifeguards who just do their lifeguarding consistently and just sort of stay out of drug rings. And that's why we don't have a movie about them. But there are other lifeguards. So this isn't just like a six-man operation.
I wonder if they have their own refrigerators. Or maybe they borrow Mitch's.
I mean, you need 4 refrigerators per tower. So, you know, it's who knows how many refrigerators just lying on this beach ready to be, you know, sort of farmers walked across or whatever.
So I had a question at this point. Do you think that after doing the True Detective scene that Alexandra Daddario only accepts roles where the director agrees to have, like, bare-ass men in the movie?
No, I feel like she's very comfortable showing off what she wants to show off.
Yeah, this is the second movie we've seen that's rated R with Alexandra Daddario that's, like, very boob-focused where we don't see anything from Alexandra.
That's true, and that's fair. But I just don't... We don't see a lot of... We see a weird lack of nudity, even from, like, sort of extras of the non-male variety, I guess, for a movie that's rated R. Because the movie doesn't, like, subvert your expectations of, like, women running across the beach in slow-mo. It gives you that. But then it sort of, I don't know, tries to be subversive by having the only nudity be, like, this guy's ass and then a dick, you know, stuck in the thing and then a dick we see later. But no, I think she's probably willing to do it for the movie. It just wasn't asked of her. And I think she's just sort of like a workman actor who just does, you know, does what she's asked, shows what she needs to show, and then, you know, cashes her check. I mean, you know, I think she's down for whatever. It's, I mean, from what we see so far.
So after the shower scene, they're at the team lunch. And I guess the gist of this scene is Matt asks Mitch why the team is always trying to play this like superhero vigilante role with things outside of lifeguarding duties. And as an audience member, I was like, yes, this fucker needs to get it through his head. Why is he doing things other than lifeguarding? And Matt says, Mitch says that they're basically, Matt says they're basically lifeguards. Let's just prevent people from drowning. They then throw a couple scenarios at him like, hey, it's more than just saving people from drowning. It's these other things. And he just correctly recommends in all situations that they call the cops or call animal control, like call the fucking authorities.
Okay, so do you remember the specific examples in this scene? Because I'm going to give you a couple.
Yeah, give them.
So Vonnie's the only one eating a salad. Everyone else is kind of eating these big meals. He kind of makes a comment. This is the movie trying to be self-aware for a minute so that we can suspend our disbelief. And this occurs 48 minutes into the movie. So the scenario is given, what happens if a school of manta rays are jumping out of the water and stinging people, Steve Irwin style, I think they say. Manta rays are enormous. I don't know if you've ever seen a manta ray.
I haven't.
They are. They can be 23 feet in width. I don't think they're known for jumping out of the water, but if they were, they don't sting. If they were jumping out of the water, the issue would be them landing on you. Because again, they're enormous. You wouldn't have to worry about being stung. Summer's a marine biologist. It feels like she should know this stuff. Is she studying marine biology? I'm not sure which it is. Right now she's a lifeguard / crime fighter. Then there's sand grifters, who are just people who steal stuff from the beach. So I think they're just thieves that operate on a beach, but they're called sand grifters. And, you know, you have to know as a lifeguard how to deal with them. This wasn't part of the lifeguard training. It wasn't like there was a discussion of this stuff when they were doing the training. And finally, there were diamond smugglers putting diamonds in surfboards to bring them ashore. So those were the scenarios. And Matt says they should call the cops and says this sounds like a really entertaining but far-fetched TV show. So this is where the movie's just like, okay, we're being self-referential. You know, we know what's going on. We know this is goofy. But, you know, bear with us a little bit is what it's saying. It's difficult. So a manta ray weighs 3,600 pounds.
Holy shit.
It's just to note. So if they're jumping out of the water at you somehow, get the fuck away from them. The movie then doesn't seem to like know whether we should think these people are crazy for constantly trying to get involved in this drug business or whether it thinks they're doing the right thing because they constantly sort of are right and succeed. And I really don't think the movie, you know, ever figures that out all the way up till the end. But yeah.
So the next scene is at the Huntley Club that Victoria invited them to earlier, where we learn that Ronnie's friend Dave is working with Victoria in some sort of hacker capacity. So the team has a pre-raid huddle as Matt continues to resist. There's a scene where Matt and Summer flirt, and Mitch and Steph end up asking Ronnie to create a distraction so that they can infiltrate. So he proceeds to do an awkward sort of one-man dance show for Victoria. So I have a question for you at this point. If you were tasked with creating a distraction at a massive nightclub, what would you do? You there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, so Ronnie gets the microphone from whoever, and then seems to, once he has the microphone, he seems to have control of, like, the lighting, because whenever he, you know, sort of references the lady, the lighting crew just spotlights her. So it seems like he can do basically anything. But yeah, he chooses this awkward dance. What would I do? I don't know. The dancing is rather effective because he's just trying to distract her in particular.
Yeah, but couldn't he have done that with a fucking conversation? Couldn't he be like, hey, let me holler at you for a second?
Well, as we know, he cannot talk to women. He can just sort of dance at them. But one thing is that she is immediately onto him somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow she is clued into what the Baywatch is doing, even though she invited them to this party for whatever reason.
I mean, of course she is, because they're the fucking crime-fighting lifeguard team. Why would she not be onto them? Like, if you're a criminal, why would you invite a lifeguard team to your party, crime-fighting lifeguard team to your party in the first place? But yeah, of course you're going to suspect that they're going to want to, like, investigate you.
But why would she... How would she know that? Why would she tell him this? Then Marty and CJ just, you know, dance around a little bit, which sort of supports the theory that CJ was just always into Marty. So there's just no arc there. They were just sort of... They could have been together from the jump, and it really wouldn't have made a difference throughout this movie in terms of the romantic arcs that we're following, of which there were, you know, two major ones, and then The Rock just being kind of giant and asexual the whole time. But yeah, in terms of distraction, I don't know, it seems to work pretty well, although it's not clear why she would be the person to distract.
Yeah, Mitch and Steph sneak into the kitchen, which still has henchmen and chefs, like, nonchalantly still working and offloading drugs in fish containers from a place called Angelo's and not Flynn's, which is how, I guess, the Huntley Club normally gets its fish, and The Rock knows this. But I was just wondering, how the fuck do the henchmen and the kitchen workers not know who Mitch is? Because everyone in the town knows who Mitch is.
Yeah, Mitch is famous, and he's enormous. It's not like you can mistake Mitch for someone else. But whenever he needs to be in disguise, he just sort of throws on a costume and no one knows who he is. The other, you know, Matt Brody is also famous. He was an Olympian. He gets recognized at this party. But this is really like an incredibly conspicuous group of people because it's just like three beautiful women, then The Rock, and then Zac Efron. And I understand, you know, at some point they're all going to be actors and stuff, but The Rock is just the most conspicuous human alive, given that he's enormous, you know. And I don't know why he keeps going on these covert missions, but he does, and it works because they find the secret fish supplier.
Yeah,
I guess.
So that whole kind of nightclub scene ends with a continued feud between Mitch and Matt, where Matt starts kind of like falling back into his old ways and starts drinking again and gets shoved by Mitch into the pool, or no, threatened by Mitch and falls into the pool. So then I guess Matt has a rough night after that.
Well, yeah, you know, he's sleeping under the dock again. He's about to drive off on his motorcycle, his dope motorcycle. But then he sees Mitch in Summer and he's like, no, I can't leave.
Oh, I think you're missing a scene where Victoria's henchman, load an unconscious Dave. They load his wetsuit up with some sort of bloody chum and dump him in the ocean for the sharks.
Well, I think he's dead at this point.
Yeah.
But yes, they throw him to the sharks, filled with chum in his wetsuit. But yeah, then Matt sees Summer, goes to apologize to Mitch for being selfish. It's really, it reminds me sort of the scene in Coach Carter.
Oh, yeah.
When Tito, I think, comes back for like the 15th time.
But I got to do a play, coach.
Yeah, I want to play. What do I got to do? And the guy's, you know, there's no I in team, whatever. We get a little bit of that. He throws away his gold medal. He has two of them. They make note of that. But this is still like a big thing of him throwing away his one gold medal. And then we sort of reach the point of the movie where the only characters are The Rock, Zac Efron, and Summer.
Yeah.
The other three just disappear for about... This is an hour in. For the next about 40 minutes, the other three disappear.
Yeah. So master plan number two is that those three are going to infiltrate the morgue and complete the autopsy that Mitch was trying to conduct earlier about how Councilman Oscar actually died. So Matt and Summer dressed in scrubs. and they wheel Mitch on a gurney through the hospital to the morgue, where Mitch apparently has an insane knowledge of morgue procedure and autopsy documentation. Mitch ends up playing a joke on Matt by telling him to check the Councilman Oscar's taint, and Mitch snaps a pic of Matt doing so, and in order to do so, he's holding a handful of nutsack.
Of course, they sneak into the thing, you know, with the lock on a gurney, with his, you know, head sticking out as he's talking. And Summer and Matt are dressed as doctors. Now, why is it less conspicuous to have two doctors and a gurney than just three doctors walking around? Because this happens on every TV show. No one ever sneaks into a hospital without pushing a gurney. But again, the Rock is just so noticeable.
But maybe not if you're horizontal.
Maybe. Although he is talking.
He is.
And it's pulled up like as if they're going to the morgue. So it's like half over his face, but like enough that he can keep talking and, you know, tell them where to go. But yes, then they get the files. Mitch knows exactly what lines to look at to see the pertinent data.
Yeah, so they determine that the cause of death was a broken neck, and that he was dead before the boat caught on fire. Apparently, Summer has an insane knowledge of autopsy and health, right? Because isn't she the one that was like, oh, yeah, if he didn't have smoke in his lungs, then, you know, clearly he was dead before the fire. We're just like, okay, cool. Way to go.
Well, Summer's a marine biologist. So I don't know if that came up in marine biology, but she does have some passing knowledge of you know, lungs and what alveoli or whatever they reference on line 12 of the autopsy.
Yeah. But before they can leave, somebody's coming, so they hide in the morgue slots, and we find out it's Victoria's henchmen who are coming in to switch out the autopsy paperwork. This leads to a chase scene. I don't know if there's anything you want to say about that other than the end of it, which I have a line from Mitch.
A couple things. So this report was done by a coroner who then made this report indicating that this guy was clearly murdered. Then the henchmen come to switch it out. But at this point, the coroner already sort of determined the guy was murdered. It's not like people just later go through lists of files to see if someone's murdered. It only matters that the Baywatch then tries to go and tell people, but then there's no evidence. But I guess what I'm driving at is, if they were going to switch it out, why wouldn't they have done it long before now? Or, like, made sure his body never got autopsied? Because having an autopsy means that the coroner knows this guy was murdered?
Furthermore, they didn't actually take his body, and his body was still in the morgue. I don't know if you can, like, re-autopsy someone, but that guy could probably just kind of, like, go back through and say, oh, yeah, I remember this guy. He has three broken whatevers, you know. It's in his short-term memory. He did it yesterday. How many autopsies is this motherfucker performing?
I mean, you know, this beach is a chaotic place, but Mitch is saving everybody, so not that many. But they also, Summer gets the henchmen switching out the files on video, which is important for the chase part of this scene.
Yeah, because he's trying to get away with her phone.
Right, so because she drops her phone in the drawers, because they're all in the, you know, the morgue drawers. And then, I don't know how he gets it.
We never see that. Like, how does...
But then he's then just booking it with the... with the phone.
Yeah.
And so there's two henchmen. One, I don't know if they have names, if they're named in the movie, but one is black and one is white. The white guy runs away with the phone, maybe?
Oh, I thought the black guy had the phone. Yeah, the black guy has the phone.
Oh, the black guy has the phone. Does the white guy do anything, or is he just kind of disappear for the...
I think he just gets away. But the Rock is in hot pursuit of the black guy with the phone.
Right.
So they kind of... I don't know, hop on jet skis and have a little chase scene where the black guy opens fire in public at the Rock, and I feel like that's enough of a reason to arrest somebody, but the guy goes unscathed ultimately. But it ends with a fight scene in some, like, somebody's house in some girl's room. And the end of it is where Mitch shoves a used diaper holder onto the black guy's head, throws him over the balcony into a pool so that he can deliver the line, "It's time for a bath, shithead."
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic, obviously. One thing is that if you're going to have The Rock in your movie, and this henchman is pretty, you know, pretty muscular guy, you can't have The Rock 1v1 fighting a guy at any point and expect us to believe that it's an even fight. You know? Because The Rock's just massive. And this guy's out of bullets because he already just shot all the bullets several times in public. Just unleashed a full clip. As they're racing away on these jet skis, Mitch does the thing where he goes over a pier at some point, does a jump. Just, you know, all kinds of crazy shit. But you can't have The Rock fighting people. Unless he's fighting like a group of people. Because he's a real life Captain America. You know, you can't just have one guy. Because it just seems fucking ridiculous. But yeah, he tosses shithead in the pool. After he hits him with a variety of baby-related objects. I do like this scene. This was fun. You know, he's hitting him with
a bottle of milk, sprays him with talcum powder.
They're choking him with the guy tries to choke him with the SpongeBob mobile. Yeah, he sprays the milk in his eye, then talcum powders him. Then just beats him up with a bottle of powder. This guy just keeps going, though. This guy is relentless. Tries to hit him with the baby picture, which The Rock stops him. And then the guy takes the swing anyways, and then The Rock really gets angry and beats him up with whatever. Puts the picture down before kicking his ass. Yeah, but then diaper, you know, whatever, his head. This is great. This is fantastic. I don't know. This is what the movie is. Yeah. Like, this is when you either like it or you don't, because this is the peak of what you expect.
Yeah. So then the next scene is where the three of them...
It should be noted, at some point he just crushes the phone with his hands. Because they don't recover the phone.
Yeah, the black guy destroys the phone.
Yeah, it's important to note there's no... The evidence is destroyed. Which is important when they go back to single cop in the
city. Yeah, so the only cop in Emerald Bay, basically, after hearing all this, says, "Why don't you guys try to stop being vigilantes and just be lifeguards?" And their boss comes over, the captain, and he doesn't even support him. He's like, "Yeah, just fucking be lifeguards."
Right, and we get... what is it? Oh, we were in a lifeguard pursuit. There's no such thing. It's just, when you guys do it, it's just a bunch of guys chasing other guys. And he says, "No offense to Summer." And then when the boss comes in, he says... See, the boss sort of, I think, fucks up this joke. Because they said, "We're investigating, guys." And we were doing an investigation. And he says, "It's not an investigation. When you guys do it, it's just a bunch of guys investing a bunch of guys." And then he says, does the no offense thing. But, like, the structure should be... It shouldn't be... investigating a second time. It should be some other word, you know, that isn't as formal. Because if you say investigating, it makes it like, if I'm investigating somebody, it's inherently an investigation, you know? So I really think he fucks that up. We also get whenever the cop is black and whenever he says to the lifeguards, "You people need to stop this," Zac Efron does the you people, which is, you know, really played out. But then The Rock gets, "You don't get to say that, you're just tan," which I thought was fantastic. I think in general, you know, when The Rock's on screen, things are funny. It's also hard to tell how smart Matt Brody's supposed to be, because he seems like he's just kind of completely brain dead for most of this movie. I mean, most of the characters seem really dopey, except, you know, Summer, who's a marine biologist, and Ronnie, who's a computer hacker, and Mitch, who just has, you know, intense lifeguard skills. But Matt Brody is just retarded this whole movie, right? Yeah. Like he's bashed over the head several times, seems like.
So after they kind of get shut down by the only cop and their boss, they still decide that it's wise to try to infiltrate Huntley again by tracking an Angelo's fish shipment. And during this scene, they actually see the drugs and immediately call apparently the only cop in the city again, who is busy recovering a dead Dave from the ocean, half eaten by a shark. So he kind of blows them off and says, "You know, you're barking up the wrong tree. Just go be lifeguards."
Yeah, so they sneak back in, and they view the people taking the drugs out of the thing. Why is this the point where they decide not to fucking record stuff on their cell phone anymore? This seems like it'd be great evidence. Yeah. Also, you all too quickly skipped over the part where The Rock is dressed as a chef and Zac Efron is dressed in drag, wearing a wig and a hat. I don't know where he, and makeup. I don't know where he got any of this stuff. But he's just an incredibly muscular guy wearing a sleeveless shirt and wearing a dress, walking through this kitchen. Like, these are the most conspicuous people. Like, I imagine this is part of the joke, but it's just so goddamn absurd that it makes it impossible to take seriously at the time.
Yeah, I don't know if this was how the normal, like, the Baywatch TV show was. Was it this dumb?
I can't imagine it, right? I mean, probably, but, like, this movie has an R rating. This movie, like, has people getting murdered. I don't know, it's kind of violent. It's like, it seems like it should be sillier if it's going to be that. Like, this seems like Austin Powers.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
It feels like, I saw it compared to 21 Jump Street. Like, that's like that's a remake of a TV show, you know, with an R rating that they were doing right now. Like, that's what this could have been, it seems like. But they sort of use their R rating to do kind of goofy shit. Like, you know, show the guy's dick as the guy's looking for his taint. But, you know, not really land a lot of the tone of the movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can't take this movie seriously. Like, even no matter what's happening on screen. Because, like, the fact that they keep doing this investigation just seems completely ridiculous.
Yeah, but that, yes. I think that dick scene was the second and final piece of nudity in the movie.
Yeah, no, that was, I mean, other than a few fucks in that, I think that's the entire R rating.
Yeah. So Mitch's boss meets them back at the lifeguard outpost after they are done at the Huntley, and he proceeds to fire Mitch while also promoting Matt to take his place. And it was just really confusing because I don't know why this guy is all over Matt's nuts.
He loves Matt.
Fucking loves Matt.
Well, it makes sense later.
Yeah.
But so at this point, Mitch tries to give the job to Stephanie just so Stephanie could get involved in the plot. But the boss just says, no, Stephanie is not going to be involved in this movie. They're not going to pay her for a speaking role. So she's just off to the side. Then the whole crew gets mad at Matt for taking the job, even though The Rock was in the room with him and could just explain to him that he tried to turn down the job, said that Stephanie could have it, and I don't know, it was kind of blameless in this, and the guy threatened to sort of violate his probation if he didn't just go along with what he was saying. So Matt's like really gets kind of thrown under the bus after trying to be a good guy here. And, you know, I'm not, you know, trying to defend Matt for all his, you know, nonsense throughout this movie, but like this, he seems kind of blameless in this one particular scene where The Rock just doesn't really stick up for him as he just gets, you know, dicked on by the whole lifeguard crew as they're pissed off at him for taking the job, as if it'd be better if he didn't take the job and what else would happen. It's not really well established.
Yeah. But they're upset at him.
Like, The Rock got fired because of stuff The Rock wanted to do. You know, it's not as if Matt got them in the situation that got The Rock fired. It was 100% The Rock dragging Matt, kicking and screaming, to do drug busts on lifeguard duty.
Yeah, but I guess that's they're part of the team. They would have also done the same thing. And I guess if Matt's in charge, he'll actually get back to lifeguarding?
Yeah, he seems to go straight to lifeguarding. Although he also does drug busting, it seems like.
Yeah.
Seems like he's had this newfound interest in that.
So one possible explanation that the captain actually promotes Matt is that this guy is a really good swimmer. And, you know, if lifeguards just do what lifeguards are supposed to do, then swimming is highly coveted, right? That's pretty much all you need to do to qualify as a successful lifeguard. Hey, are you really good at swimming? Cool. You can be a lifeguard. You can be the head of the lifeguard.
Provided there's no manta ray attacks.
Yeah.
It's mostly a swimming contest.
In which case, call the police. You know, Matt has a fucking head on his shoulders in this regard. But if you had the opportunity to hire Michael Phelps, for instance, as a lifeguard, or Ryan Lochte, for what reasons would you disqualify him?
Well, I mean, if he didn't understand the value of teamwork, you know, if he wasn't willing to go along with, you know, sort of the broader scope crime fighting that happens on a beach.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, things along those lines. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Michael Phelps can swim fast, which is, you know, 95% of lifeguarding, as long as you also have, you know, incredibly good, you know, hearing. So maybe if he failed a hearing test, or if he didn't study his books of, you know, call outs, because you need to know that a 582 is a fire on a boat rather than just someone saying that to you. Because like Mitch is called Lieutenant Buchanan. He runs this as sort of like a pseudo military thing. They're always using military time and they have their little, you know, radios and stuff. But is it explained that he was in the military? Is that what we're supposed to get? Like, cause this is he runs his own little paramilitary force that, I don't know. It's never really brought up in this 2 hour. This movie is really long.
Yeah, it is.
This is a 2 hour movie for seemingly no reason. But yeah, this is where Mitch gets his job at the Sprint store.
Yep. So Mitch gets the job at Sprint, where he's visited by the actual David Hasselhoff. And I think I missed it. Was David Hasselhoff like, was he dreaming or was David Hasselhoff actually there?
I think he was actually there.
Okay, because that's how I that's how I perceived it, but I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be like a dream sequence. So David Hasselhoff, who played Mitch on the TV show, tries to inspire him to go back and protect the bay. And I guess Mitch doesn't want any part of it.
Right. I mean, and he's just credited as the mentor in this, so... we see that he got a keychain... from David Hasselhoff. Mitch did, so it seemed like David Hasselhoff had passed the torch to Mitch, and now he was giving it to Brody. So Brody's back at the beach, and this is where he spots the sand grifter. Do you remember this scene?
Is this before or after he goes to visit the only cop in the city?
Well, this is before, because this is how he gets... the special modified stealing cooler.
That's right, that's right. Yeah. So he tackles the sand grifter.
So he chases down the sand grifter, and the sand grifter has this cooler with like a trap door that you can put it over the top of stuff, and then it will kind of close around the stuff, and you can pick up your cooler again and have the stuff inside. It's really dope, and I think we should try to find one of these.
How would you use it?
Well, I mean, grifting on the beach, obviously.
Oh, you want to take up grifting as a hobby?
Well, I mean, I'm a natural sand grifter, stealing evidence from the only cop in the city who has the only file in the city on his desk, obviously. I don't know. I just feel like there's a variety of grifting opportunities you can use as long as no one ever actually tries to use your cooler and no one ever looks at the bottom of your cooler.
Yeah, very important.
Because you just have a theft cooler, which makes it kind of obvious that you're a thief.
So, after stealing the file from the only cop in the city, he approaches Summer, who is not only kind of like the autopsy expert and the marine biologist, she is a marine biologist and identifies that Dave was stabbed because the marks on his stomach aren't consistent with shark bites. And I think you can see that because they're not in like a crescent moon or any sort of pattern. It's just sort of like a fucking knife puncture wound. You know, so she's really bright here. But this is the second time that there's another person dead before they hit the water. And amazingly, at this point, we find out that Ronnie, who used to be co-workers with Dave, has been sitting on the information that Dave was doing some sort of IT tech work for Victoria this whole time. Which then leads Ronnie and Matt to hack Victoria and dig up dirt on her, which seems like the much easier plan from the get-go rather than doing the whole nightclub infiltration scene earlier. But how did Ronnie not say anything? He's like, oh yeah, no, I haven't. Like,
I'll call my friend Dave, who is currently working. When they infiltrate the nightclub, Dave is working there at that time, doing some computer blackmailing shit. They could have just called Dave the whole time.
So were they not supposed to be friends? Were they just supposed to be acquaintances? I don't get it.
I don't know. They definitely seemed like friends. Like they. I mean, he said they worked together, but I don't know. He seemed to know what was going on. He seemed to know that he had a thing for CJ. He met him out at the beach to test his quadcopter. I mean, I don't know. That's not really coworker stuff to me. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah.
Seemed like a friend. I mean, he didn't notice when the guy died. I don't know how much time has passed at this point. It seemed like it was only a couple days, you know, before Mitch gets fired at most. And then it seems like some indeterminate amount of time after Mitch has been fired.
Yeah, I kind of lost track of time at that point.
So I don't know how long Dave's been missing that Ronnie was just like, oh, I wonder where my friend is. Hope he's not, you know, dead in the ocean eating my sharks.
So after they get this dirt, they realize...
Oh, wait. Okay. So when they're hacking the computer, though, it's important to note that some of the files they hack are literally just pictures of bricks of drugs. You know? And then pictures of the compartments on the boats where they hide the drugs. Like, they kept their drug smuggling blueprints just like in case. And then they just had a picture of a stack of drugs as if it was in an evidence locker. Like, when do you do that? You know what I mean? Just photographing all your crimes.
I don't know. Is that what Scooby-Doo villains do?
I think so.
Well, then if it's...
Well, Scooby-Doo villains, you just have to pull off the mask at the end and then it's obvious that it's them. But Victoria Leeds was not wearing a mask in this movie, so they had to be a little bit more roundabout with computer hacking. So then they go to the beach. They have a little campfire ceremony.
Yeah, the pre-raid huddle around the campfire, and they come up with the master plan number three to invite themselves onto Victoria's yacht, who is apparently one victim away from owning all the coastal real estate of Emerald Bay and needs to invite Chen onto her yacht so that she can kill him and dump him in the ocean. And they can seamlessly invite themselves to her party because she didn't whisper to Ronnie earlier in the movie that she's onto them. You know, that
doesn't make sense. She put like a bulletin to her two henchmen to not let these guys on the boat. Also, I don't know why she needs to get Chen at the party. I don't know why she's having another party. It seems like if she just needs to get Chen, she could just get Chen. You know, rather than... does she invite him to the party to lure him there and then kidnap him? Is that what...
I think that's the plan.
...happens? Okay, because it just seems like weird to, you know, kidnap someone mid-party and then just have them kind of chill.
Nah, wouldn't... I mean, if you were going to kidnap somebody, wouldn't you want a whole bunch of witnesses around?
As many as possible. Yeah.
So at this point we get, slow-mo titty bounce number 8. I know you mentioned some titty bounces earlier, but I was only counting the slow-mo ones, as they're gangster walking down this plank toward the party, during which Matt and Summer find the drugs underneath the ship, and the rest of the team find Chen locked up, you know, kind of bound and gagged on the top deck.
Right. Now, they're mostly dressed in gold for whatever reason. They sort of have the... Zac Efron has a gold jacket, and two of the girls, the two non-summer girls, have gold dresses. CJ is wearing the shortest dress I think you can get away with, you know, in public. And then Summer is just wearing, you know, pink, or like some kind of purple thing. So they kind of like went color coordinated. This is the only time I think we see them like not wearing their, you know, red and blue, you know, life jacket attire. So it's a, you know, it's different, but you know, they dress up a little bit. I guess the party earlier, they dressed up a little bit, but this is really, you know, the cocktail dress scene that, you know, you have to have in one of these movies.
Yeah. So the result of the party is that I guess Leeds, gets away with Matt trapped in a lobster cage on her second boat.
I actually sort of took like a whole play by play.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Matt finds the drugs in a hatch under the dock, under the boat. Now, after he finds this hatch filled with, like, bricks of whatever, he cuts it open to make sure they're drugs. This is all underwater. This is the craziest fucking thing. Yeah, he cuts it open just to make sure that they're smuggling drugs and not just smuggling some other thing. Then they say, call Mitch. They call him on the CV, or CB radio. Because Matt gets captured by Victoria in the henchmen. The other Chen is being guarded, but that guard gets knocked out by Stephanie and Summer.
Yeah, Summer whacks him with a fire extinguisher.
Fire extinguisher. After he pulls a gun on CJ and Ronnie and Chen and whoever. So then Victoria sees Victoria and her two henchmen, the two named, we don't know their names, but they were the two primary henchmen, all decide to leave the party and take Matt Brody on the boat with him in a cage. They see Summer, Chen, and CJ going on a different, escaping, I think, on a different boat? Or just escaping down the
dock? I think they were just going back to the dock.
Because their plan then is to go to the firework station because Victoria's planning to get away via helicopter.
Which is weird because I'm not sure what she did wrong at this point that would cause her to need to go away other than, I guess, having kidnapped Chen, but...
She kidnapped Chen and now she needs to escape, I guess. Yeah, I was also sort of wondering about that because she committed several murders before this and didn't really seem...
Where was she going? All of the real estate she owned was in that fucking area. So
yeah, they know who she is. I don't know where she thought she'd go. Matt thinks that Summer comes to save him, but it turns out it's actually Mitch. And they're playing, they're underwater, and it looks like Summer and Matt are kissing, but it's actually Mitch and Matt maybe kissing underwater as he's sort of hallucinating. And they're playing How Deep Is Your Love, which I thought was great. Then they get back to the lifeguard Baywatch boat. They have a fleet of speedboats.
Yeah.
They keep complaining about budget cuts, but they have a fleet of basically whatever the hell they want. Because they have boats, they have ATVs, they have jet skis. Just all over the place. So then The Rock and Zac Efron go to the fireworks barge to try to stop Victoria from taking off. We see a clip of this sea urchin, which is poisonous and gives you an adrenaline rush, makes you say weird stuff, and then kills you. This was sort of discussed early in the movie, but it's coming back now. CJ kisses Ronnie to tells him he's the tech guy to inspire him to launch the fireworks or something.
I guess launching the fireworks at the helicopter.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a very complicated fireworks launching process. I mean, if he was launching nuclear missiles, I can't imagine it'd be more complex than this is. But he successfully almost shoots this fucking helicopter out of the air. I don't know if this helicopter pilot is inherently a bad guy because he's helping this lady, you know, charter a flight. But this dude just blasts him with fucking fireworks. And the guy still tries to land, which, I mean, is there a helipad on a, you know, fireworks barge? Hard to tell.
On hers there is? Was it her fireworks barge?
I mean, it's difficult to say at this point. Probably. She seemed to run this entire town.
So, you know, the team basically thwarts her getaway and outfights her henchmen who have guns with their sick combat skills. So I guess the combat training from earlier paid off. But awaiting them...
Summer's not actually on this, though, and she was the one who got the combat training.
Yeah, so maybe...
Summer's just... I actually don't know where Summer is at this point. Summer and Stephanie are no longer in this movie because we don't need them. For this spot. Stephanie was never in the movie, but Summer is temporarily sidelined. But yeah, Zac Efron and The Rock out battle the henchmen until Weed shoots The Rock and he falls into the ocean.
Yeah.
And then Weed shoots her own henchman.
The white guy, yeah.
The white henchman.
Yeah. Zac Efron kills the black henchman.
He at least knocks him to the water. So then she holds a gun to Zac Efron's head. Then the Rock comes back, and she sort of holds him captive. Holds Zac Efron captive. And then the Rock gives his own little speech that says, do you remember this speech?
A super cheesy speech, yeah.
Okay, so she says, the best thing about winning, you get to write the story of what happens. Seems like it was very poorly translated from some other language. And then he says, I was born of the sea. I eat fire coal and piss salt water. I scratch my back with a whale's dick and roof of my chest with his ball sack. I'll die when the tides stop and the moon drowns. I'm oceanic motherfucker. And then blast her in the chest with a Roman candle. That Ronnie and CJ activate just in time, I guess. And she explodes. Like, she fucking explodes. Chunks of her are raining from the sky at this point.
Well, did he... I thought he shot her with the Roman candle and launched her into the helicopter, which then may have chopped her up.
Oh, I thought the Roman candle just exploded her.
Oh, it could have.
You think she was knocked into the... Zac Efron knocks the gun away. Yeah, I'm trying to check what's happening. Yeah, he just sort of blasts her in the chest. No, the helicopter just kind of flies away at this point. I don't think she got chopped up by the helicopter because she just sort of falls, like her hand just falls right down next to Zac Efron. And then the whole fireworks show goes off. So, the Rock just, like, murdered this lady. We find out the Rock was stuck by one of the sea urchins, which is why he was full of adrenaline and saying weird shit. But luckily there's an antidote.
Yeah, earlier in the movie he said that you die if you get stung by it.
Right, but not if you had the antidote. Yeah. Which is what happens. But I think that's why he kind of gave the weird speech, because early he says you get adrenaline and say weird stuff, so this was sort of keying us into that's what happened. Gotcha. Even though the, like, 15 extra shots of the, you know, sea urchin as they climbed up the thing weren't enough. Oh, no, the black henchman gets arrested at the end. So I guess he's the one who got arrested because the white henchman gets shot and Victoria gets blown up.
Yeah. So then they're back on shore and the cop finally admits, or the only cop finally admits that Mitch was right. And they kind of have like a bury the hatchet sort of deal. The captain comes over and tries to throw in his two cents. And Matt at this point knows that he was bribed by Victoria. So he just punches him in the face and then places him under citizen's arrest. And then the next scene, it sort of cuts pretty quickly because they're like wrapping the shit up. You know, Ronnie wakes
up. Yeah, I mean, two hours in, we have to accelerate.
Yeah. Ronnie wakes up naked on CJ's couch. And we get a final pantsless ass slap, which I'm counting as number 9. And then we see.
Well, okay. So she comes in. So he wakes up with what is supposed to be drool on his chin. On his, like, side of his mouth. But doesn't... I don't know. Looks strange. Just sort of glistening. Yeah, but he wakes up, wipes his mouth. CJ walks in, putting on a shirt. She was just wearing a bra and underwear. She mounts him. Then walks away and slaps her own ass after asking him what he wants for breakfast and making him, like, a 12-course breakfast. So this is just the ultimate, like, wish fulfillment scene out of anything, is that if you're nerdy and launch a bunch of fireworks at the Baywatch, you'll get to sleep with this girl who then make her dinner and slap her own ass for you, which I guess is just, you know, the full service, you know, experience, I'd imagine.
Yeah. So then we cut to Matt and Summer flirting back at the tower. And I think you want to mention something here.
Oh, well, I mean, assume you're just guessing, but she, Summer looks down at his dick. He says, did you look at my dick? And she says, now we're even, which was important because that joke was artfully set up earlier when we had a scene about her boobs. So yeah, now they're even. Yeah,
but Zac Efron wasn't like doing a helicopter dick for her, so you know, kind of still unfair.
No, I mean, had he done it, he would have done it afterwards. But that would have been hard because he was wearing pants, as far as we can tell in this scene.
Yeah.
The Rock returns his medal to him.
Yeah, because they have to run from where they're sharing a kiss on the tower to go be blessed by Mitch as graduates of the training program. So apparently, all this was training. And they weren't.
Yeah, they were trainees this entire time. This was, you know, I don't know if every Baywatch crew stops an international drug ring and real estate plot, but this group did. I mean, maybe that's why there were three openings, because, you know, the last three didn't make it because their drug ring was a little more sinister, had more than two nameless henchmen.
Yeah. So, and this is kind of like the final scene where, you know, we saw Hasselhoff earlier and The Rock says, oh, we have our, you know, Casey Jean friend from some other area,
Hawaii.
So Pamela Anderson comes in, and that's a slow-mo titty bounce entrance. Cause she's in a white suit with no shirt. We'll call that number 10. Yeah, but she doesn't have any speaking lines like Hasselhoff did. And then the final scene of the movie is the whole team, you know, the characteristic Baywatch, what you think, the whole team slow motion jogging together in a line, which is number 11 for me. You there?
So did you stick around for the bloopers at the end?
Oh, well then I just have outtakes. Yeah, I did watch that.
Because I watched all the outtakes, which I thought were fantastic. They had more of Zac Efron playing with the guy's dick. They had more of Ronnie and CJ. She says, oh, you have a great chest. He says, oh, I like your chest too. And she says, oh, it doesn't work when you say it back to me. And then we have Alexander Daddario saying, why do our swimsuits ride up our ass so much? And CJ says, makes us faster in the water. And then they have, they actually have a ticker as they show various scenes of the girls pulling bathing suits or dresses out of their ass to try to adjusting this swimwear. And I think it gets to about 15 during the movie. And then it ends with a zoom in on Vonnie's dick. And then there's a little more of Alexander Daddario doing the bounce. And she says, Zac Efron, I'd really like it if you wore tighter pants. So. Oh, and then we get the scene with David Hasselhoff and The Rock chilling on the beach.
Yeah.
Sort of a post-credits scene. 2 hours of that. That was 2 hours.
Yeah. So you said you did some research.
I did. I did a little reading. So I read a couple reviews, and I thought some of them were pretty accurate. This first one, they were mostly negative. They didn't get a lot of good reviews. The Rock actually made a tweet saying this wasn't for critics, it was for the fans. Although its fan rating, I think, is around 55. So the fans didn't love it either. I don't know how many Baywatch fans there are that would watch this movie. Because it seems like it was, you know, aimed at like 20-year-olds, maybe. And I can't imagine like the 40-year-old Baywatch watching crowd would have loved it. But a few of the reviews. Baywatch is surprisingly without sexism or condescension. It's equal opportunity stupid. Which I thought was accurate because, you know, for a movie that spends most of its time, you know, ogling people, it really did, you know, get a lot, you know, get every kind of angle of everybody, which I thought was great. Even Ronnie got a lot of, you know, a lot of shots of him, you know, especially his dick in a few scenes. Try as it might to emulate the formula of Phil Lord and Chris Miller's ultra-successful big-screen 21 Jump Street reboot franchise, the decidedly less canny Baywatch lands with a shrug of indifference despite the solid effort of a well-matched cast. And finally, it boasts unpardonably terrible CGI, even worse green screen effects, and the maturity of a 12-year-old boy whose internet privileges have been revoked. That seems right. This seems like if you tried to search for porn, but you had Safe Search on, you probably mostly get scenes from this movie. I'd imagine.
Which I guess is like the original Baywatch's intent. Like, that whole show was just media executive solution to be able to rate something PG while also showing big-titted women bouncing, you know, in their underwear. So that seems pretty on point.
Yeah, I mean, the movie did what it set out to do, maybe. It's just hard to tell what it was setting out to do. Because, again, it only made $58 million. It had an R rating. I don't know what the audience they thought they were going to get for this was. But I can't imagine they landed it, because I don't know.
Yeah.
It didn't seem to get there for a lot of people. I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. It was 2 hours. I think there's probably like a good hour and 30 minute movie in there.
You think?
I really do think so. I mean, I think if you just edited down the plot a little bit, you know, I think maybe the girl Stephanie just needs to not be in the movie because she doesn't get developed at all and has no lines.
Well, that, and I guess I would trade out all of Matt and Summer's romance scenes for maybe like a more developed arc of Ronnie and CJ. That'd probably be a good trade-off.
They should probably just pick one of the two. It's kind of weird that the third group, like the third, you know, male-female grouping doesn't get matched up at all, and it's just sort of dropped. Because, you know, there's three guys and three girls on this thing, and, you know, two sets get paired up. And the villain was kind of a little bit ridiculous, but, like, you barely spent any time with her, so who the hell cares? It really wasn't the point of it. So I thought that was fine. I mean, the plot didn't make a ton of sense because it, like, there's a lot of like continuity stuff that doesn't make a ton of sense with it. Actually, there's a deleted scene with the phone where they actually retrieve the phone from the white henchman after doing a little scooter chase, and Alexander Daddario flashes like her bra at the guy and then hits him in the face with the surfboard thing. So it seems like they really didn't like that whole chase part. They really didn't have any idea where that was going, because they sort of edited it a few different ways. But at the beginning, I mean, Mitch is set up as this like larger than life guy. At some point he passes two people and they're like, I heard he invented Google and cured the common cold. So he's sort of like, you know, sort of like Chuck Norris joke type things. But like, he seems like a clown the whole time because he keeps trying to not be a lifeguard.
Yeah.
And like, clearly that seems to be the right thing to do. But he's also correct about this drug dealing. But there doesn't seem to be any other avenue for people solving it. So I think the movie just needs to like figure out what its tone was going to be. And then do that. Rather than not do that. But I think if you edited this down, it's like a pretty entertaining. Like, I found all the cast pretty appealing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, The Rock's great. I like Zac Efron. I didn't know the blonde girl. What's her name?
Jennifer Rohrbach or something?
I think Kelly Rohrbach. I thought she was entertaining. I've never seen her in anything else.
No, me neither.
But, I mean, she seemed, you know, down to do what this movie was asking her. And Stephanie's actress was Ilfen Esha Hedera, who was just not in the movie. I mean, they just, in 2 hours, they couldn't find, I don't think she had a single scene that discussed her character in any way, other than that she should have been the second in command, but you could have just had CJ do that, because CJ had also been part of the Baywatch previously. And CJ is the only one who ever explains anything about the Baywatch to us, when it's not Mitch. So, I don't know, I feel like there was a lot of stuff that maybe could have been, you know, changed a little bit, but I thought it was like an entertaining movie. I'm surprised at like how bad the reviews are and stuff. I mean, I've never seen Baywatch, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think that blonde girl kind of resembles Pam Anderson, like more than I was expecting.
Well, Pam Anderson's had a lot of work done now, so it's hard to tell.
I'm talking early 90s Pam Anderson.
I'm not familiar with what she,
what yeah, she looked like. I think now, that was a good casting choice. I don't know who it is, but I think they did well. All right, so it sounds like you're going to give this an uncle?
Oh, this is definitely an uncle for me. I would absolutely watch this again. I actually did watch this again while we were discussing it. Because, again, we managed to go about the length of the movie.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was great. I think The Rock's always entertaining. He's just so enormous. I think the early part where they're just on the beach doing the competition, as like silly as this competition was, is the best part. I mean, I think the part where the movie really had trouble was sort of the middle hour where they just sort of bounce around. They sort of just throw in that the captain's involved, but it feels like that should have been established a little bit more beforehand, and that's why he kept trying to get Matt to be in charge, because he figured Matt would just sort of look the other way.
Yeah,
that was sort of his role in the scheme that like was just sort of offhandedly mentioned. I take it that you did not like this movie as much as I did. I
might have to give this movie a nephew. I would not watch it again.
You would not
watch it again? I think it had its positives, but overall, yeah. Bad movie.
So have you seen the original Baywatch? Like, did you have any expectations of it?
No. The only two expectations I had were that it was, going to be slow-mo boobs bouncing. And that's it. On a beach.
Right. And it definitely delivered.
Absolutely.
On that.
Yeah.
But I think it could have done more slow-mo. Because I think like it could have really leaned into how stupid it was.
Well, at the very end, at least the Pam Anderson thing, they were like, yeah, she's just always in slow motion, and everyone else was in real time.
Right, yeah, they sort of referenced the slow motion a couple times.
So they poke fun at themselves, and I like that aspect of the movie. But, you know, overall, still a bad movie.
Still a bad movie? Okay, I think there's something in there. I think there's a good movie in there, you know?
Yeah, I'll give you that.
You know, I mean, I didn't take 6 hours to watch it, so maybe it just flowed better for me.
Possibly. I'll give it another watch. We have it for another 2 days.
Okay, so you got to see. I bought it expecting to like it. I paid the $9.99 to buy it on Amazon. I guess you just rented it. Yeah. But you know, I was pretty confident in this movie. You know, and it delivered. I thought. You know, they were going to make a sequel, but it didn't make enough money, and I think you know, The Rock sort of prints money at this point, so he didn't feel like doing another one, but won 5 nominations at the Golden Raspberries. You know, just sort of, I mean, it was just a movie with The Rock, you know, just standard Rock stuff. You get what you get. But yeah, I don't know. I was pretty excited about it. I thought it was probably better than The Layover. Oh, The Layover was shorter and had a sort of a tighter plot, maybe.
Absolutely better than The Layover.
Like, you think it was better?
I don't think any movie could be as bad as The Layover.
You don't think? Well,
we will.
Okay. Well, I think is that all your questions for this week? Did we cover
all I got?
Okay. Well, this is our fourth episode.
Yep.
Fourth episode. It's our longest yet, which wasn't what we were told to try, but try new things, and I don't know. They got best movie yet so far, so we're trending upward. I think we're trending length, quality, number of uncles, number of slow motion bounces, all across the board. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, until next time, Tank. We'll end it there.
Alrighty. Where?